This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 17th, 2021 on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. It's hot, it's humid, and we're going to spend part of our hour talking about the weather. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda reports that for 45 years, the Crawford-Sebastian Community Development Council has helped low-income Arkansans reduce their utility bills through its weatherization program. And Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore sits down with meteorologist Dan Scoff to discuss tornadoes, the science of predicting weather, and why some meteorological legends are really kind of fact. And in our second half hour, we move the discussion to music with Timothy Dennis's weekly guide to live music around here and a new sound perimeter from Leah Uribe. On today's Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston, professional runner Nikki Hiltz could become one of the first openly transgender athletes to compete at the Olympics. They share their journey. Here and Now starts after today's Ozarks at Large at 1. 288 new cases of COVID-19 are being added to the state's totals after another day of testing. Hospitalizations and active cases increased in the last 24 hours by 7 patients and 107 active cases, respectively. In Arkansas, 6 variants of the coronavirus that cause COVID-19 have been identified as those labeled as of concern by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Jennifer Dillahay with the Arkansas Department of Health says testing for the newest, the Delta variant, has been sent to out-of-state labs.
This variant is more likely to cause severe disease and could put someone in the hospital. So if someone is seriously ill, then we try to get that specimen also. It takes about 3 weeks or more.
According to the CDC, the 3 vaccines currently being administered in Arkansas have proven to be effective at protecting against the variants. Researchers at the University of Arkansas will use a $320,000 grant from NASA to study how carbon dioxide ice pits in polar caps on Mars have evolved over time. It's to better understand how the ice pits have an impact on the overall atmospheric dynamics of the planet. 18 Northwest Arkansas nonprofits will split $100,000 in grants from the United Way of Northwest Arkansas. The grants are intended to help area families not be left behind in the wake of economic instability from the pandemic. Organizations receiving funds include Appleseeds, Legal Aid of Arkansas, and Northwest Arkansas Head Start. The University of Arkansas track and field programs are again being recognized as among the best in the country. The women's program was named second best for the just completed season in the annual Terry Crawford Program of the Year Awards presented by the U.S. Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association. The Razorback women won the Indoor National Track Championship and had top 20 finishes in the NCAA cross country and outdoor track seasons. The men's program is being recognized as the best program in the just completed season. The men had a fourth place finish at the NCAA Cross Country Championships and a seventh place finish at the indoor meet. The Men's Program of the Year Award is named the John McDonnell Program of the Year Award. A few clouds tonight with lows in the lower 70s across the region. Friday's forecast includes sunny conditions with highs from 92 to 96, heat index values near 100 in the Arkansas River Valley. Saturday, mostly sunny, highs from 92 to 95, and Sunday, sunny with highs from 92 to 97. This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday. The American Red Cross says there is a severe shortage of blood supply as spring begins to turn into summer. This morning, we reached Joe Zidlow, Regional Communications Coordinator for the Red Cross, to talk about the upcoming blood drives. And we'll tell you more about those in a few minutes. He says there is also a sickle cell awareness blood drive at McLarty Daniel Chrysler Dodge in Bentonville until 5 tonight. He says this is in conjunction with World Sickle Cell Day that will be observed Saturday.
It's a way for us to bring awareness to sickle cell and also to get more donors, especially those who may be African-American or Latino or whatever, to come and donate because sickle cell affects the African-American communities and Hispanic communities more so than if you are white or Caucasian, and that's the you know, that's the main thing, is we want to make sure we bring awareness to it, and it's very important. And you know, we're just happy that they partnered with us, and hope we have a great drive.
What has it been like the last 13 or 14 months for you and your colleagues at the Red Cross?
I'll tell you, it's been challenging. It really has. I think nobody really knew what was going to happen or how we were going to deal with things last March. You know, March, right around mid-March 2020, when things really started to pick up and escalate, it was definitely a challenge for us. You know, we had really, emergency needs for all blood types. We had a lot of blood drives that were canceling. And, I will say this, Kyle, that the good news is that people in the communities really stepped up. They made, we got messaging out. Obviously, the governor was very, played a big role in that, getting the word out, telling, people to make sure you continue to donate blood so we avoid emergencies and we don't have shortages for patients in hospitals that need it. for those cases. So that really helped. And then from that point on, really going into April, really through probably April of this year, is where we really saw things, continue to just be, to be great. We were able to hit our goals every month. People continue to step up. They made it essential. They continue to donate blood. We were seeing a lot of first-time donors coming. I certainly think that, antibody testing, COVID-19 antibody testing, was a bit of a game changer for us. We started that June 15th of last year. I remember that day exactly, when we started to test all blood donations for COVID-19 antibodies. And I think people just wanted to know, hey, was I exposed? I hadn't been tested, but I may have been around somebody and may not have known it, may have been asymptomatic and may not have had any kind of issues, may have had a cold or something. Maybe it was more than what I thought. And so we gave them a peace of mind with that testing. And they, in return, were helping us save lives by donating blood and making sure that blood was available on the shelves. So we really had a great stretch, to answer your question. It was fantastic. We hit our goals for the last 14 months. What we've really seen now in the last really 7 to almost 8 weeks is presentation of donors starting to go down, people making appointments. They're not honoring those appointments. And we're starting to see, drops in the inventory level, whereas more procedures have continued to be added to hospitals. They're doing more elective and non-elective procedures, and we're seeing more and more blood being asked for and going out to hospitals than we have coming in. So, you factor that in with more of the procedures, with presentation dropping, and that's a real precarious position to be in. So that's why we have a severe shortage for all blood types right now, and we hope that people will step up and make a donation now, and then remember to do that again in early to mid-August when you're eligible again. I think if people do that twice, if we can get them to sort of turn to during this summer, pre-summer, and towards the end of August or so, I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, a press release that the Red Cross sent out a few days ago mentioned that, comparing numbers from now, 2021, to 2 years ago now, 2019, there's been a rise of about 10% in demand from hospitals and trauma centers. And so I know that in the summer, the blood donations go down. You're right. That is sort of a double whammy, fewer donations and now an increase over a 2-year period for demand.
It really has been. And that's been the challenge. You hit it on the head. I think a lot of the hospitals are seeing atypically high number of traumas and emergency room visits is different types of things that we're talking about. Transplants, you have the trauma situations, obviously accidents, those things don't happen. I think as more people get back on the road, you may see more people taking road trips with their families and doing things. There's more of a risk or chance that could happen. So you're right. Yeah. I mean, we've seen it, that 10% climb just in about 2 years, and that's more than 5 times the growth of some of the other facilities that provide blood transfusion. So when the hospitals are telling us that, we just can't take a break. A couple of the other factor in is that, we do about 20% of our blood drives, at least we did pre-pandemic, at schools. So it'd be, middle schools, high schools, colleges, community colleges, university type things. We do a lot of drives there. We were starting to get a lot of those drives back, probably earlier portion of this year, starting to get those back on the books. But now we hit the summer, and we always have that 18 to 20% drop that we have to make up for. And couple the fact that everybody's, going on the road and taking vacation. So that's always been a challenge. But now, having seen this, this is just another wrinkle into the challenges that we have, and makes it all the more important for people to, make sure that they continue to, keep blood donation on their mind and continue to do that.
Joe Zidlow is Regional Communications Coordinator for the American Red Cross. He talked to us about the severe shortage of blood earlier this morning. The Sickle Cell Awareness Blood Drive on Bentonville, he mentioned, lasts until 5 today at McLarty Daniel Chrysler Dodge in Bentonville. Other upcoming blood drives include Monday at First Baptist Church on West Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers from 10 until 3. Then Wednesday next week at the Center for Nonprofits in Rogers from noon until 4. Also Wednesday next week from noon to 6 at Central United Methodist on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
Support for KUAF comes from Westwood Gardens, a family-owned garden center with 4 locations in Northwest Arkansas. Westwood plants are grown locally and offer a variety of annuals, perennials, hanging baskets, and more. Westwoodgardens.com for more information. KUAF is supported by Hendricks College in Conway. Founded in 1876, Hendricks is recognized by education author Lauren Pope as one of 40 colleges that change lives and is nationally recognized for academic excellence, engaged learning, innovation, and more among private liberal arts colleges. Hendricks.edu/connect for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. As the temperature climbs, so too will utility bills as Arkansans try to stay cool this summer. To help keep those bills in check, low-income households may consider applying to a weatherization program through a community action agency. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda tells us more.
The Crawford-Sebastian Community Development Council has offered its weatherization program since 1976, and Caleb Brown, Director of Home Ownership and Asset Development, says a lot has changed since then. For example, many utility companies now offer their own weatherization programs, but the council's program is separate from those. The U.S. Department of Energy provides funding for that program, which is distributed through the state. Brown says they provide qualified households with energy efficiency upgrades, and they inspect the health and safety of the home.
We're air sealing, using caulking. We can do insulation, things like that, to kind of seal up the airflow of a home. And then in addition to that, we'll look at some of the major appliances, so water heaters, refrigerators, heating and air units. We'll look at all that. See if they're operating efficiently or not, if they're safe to be in the house.
The weatherization program assists homeowners in 14 counties whose incomes are 200% of the poverty level. At an average cost of $7,600 per household, Brown says they serve a minimum of 150 households annually.
After they've been weatherized and their utility bills comes down, they're no longer making a choice between their utility bill or their medicine. Or food or something like that. A lot of these that we help have to make those tough decisions. And the weatherization program can help them with that utility cost so they're not having to sacrifice things that they really shouldn't have to.
Since opening this year's weatherization program in October, the council has already served nearly 100 households. Arkansans have had to wait up to 6 months to get their houses weatherized in the past, but right now, there's no waiting list. Brown says the pandemic has helped them upgrade homes more quickly.
With the pandemic and everybody working from home, it was easier for us to get in the houses. So we weren't spread out across the month. We could do it back to back to back. So it actually helped us out on our production end.
During Brown's 2 years at the Crawford-Sebastian Community Development Council, DOE funding has increased from $1 million to $1.2 million, and more money is on the way. $4.5 billion in supplemental funding has been approved through the American Rescue Plan, but Brown says they don't know how much the council will receive yet. The federal funding supports the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP, which can use the money to finance weatherization efforts. LIHEAP has a summer and winter program, and Carol Jenkins, the council's LIHEAP director, says they often refer LIHEAP applicants to the weatherization program as well. The winter LIHEAP program ran from January to May and provided $518,000 for 3,043 applications.
Which was 106 more applications than we did the previous year, and almost $100,000 more than what we did the previous year. At for the same winter program. So it was a little bit more than what we had anticipated, but it it went out there, and we still got some money left that will roll over into our summer program.
Jenkins has worked with the council nearly 31 years and says they haven't seen this type of increase in applications in the past.
Well, the last time we did the Recovery Act, it went more into housing and things like that. Now, the thing that I've seen grow more is the rental assistance. We've had more people needing rental than anything, and we still have money left in rental.
Arkansans can apply for rental assistance at arfreshstart.com. In terms of the LIHEAP program, Jenkins says the Crawford-Sebastian Community Development Council expects to begin accepting applications for its summer program in July, but an exact date has not yet been set. While details of that program are being finalized, eligible Arkansans can apply for the weatherization program. Applications and details about the council's various programs are available at cscdc.net. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
March, April, and May are typically tornado season in Arkansas and Oklahoma. But as Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore finds out, weather is a little hard to pin down sometimes.
Arkansas and tornadoes seem to go hand in hand, especially outside of the Ozarks. Dan Scoff remembers his days in college at Oklahoma University, where he studied meteorology and headed out after a batch of storms.
Yeah, we storm chased. I chased the May 3rd 99 tornadoes. We started actually January 21st. This is kind of an interesting thing, but January 21st, 1999 was the biggest tornado outbreak in Arkansas's history. Arkansas had 56 tornadoes that day, and we saw five supercells. We actually skipped a class, a weather class to chase, and the professor, you know, we didn't have any tests or anything like that. And oddly enough, we were okay with that. The professor was okay with that.
Scoff started his career in 2000 and has spent the last 15 years in Fayetteville. These days, he's the chief meteorologist for KNWA and Fox 24. Before we can really begin talking about tornadoes, we have to ask, what are the weather elements necessary to cause a tornado?
Okay, that's a great question. You know, scientists are still trying to understand the exact process that goes behind what we call tornado genesis. Tornado genesis is the process of tornadoes developing. And so we know there are several ingredients that you need. Number one, you need instability. Instability is where you have warm, humid air that's near the surface, and then you have cold, dry air aloft. And so that allows the thunderstorms to grow. So first you have to have thunderstorms, and that comes from instability. Next thing is wind shear. Now, wind shear is very important. It's the change in direction and speed of the wind with height. So for instance, on a severe weather day, you might have a south-southeasterly wind at the surface. You look at the clouds, they're moving from south to north, and then you look above with those really high-level clouds, and they're coming in from the west. That's wind shear. And the wind shear is what allows these storms to rotate. And then the final ingredient is a low-level rotation that's horizontal. Because if you have wind speed that's changing with height, you get a horizontal roll that's along the ground. And if the storm is going to follow that horizontal roll in a perfect parallel pattern, that allows that horizontal roll to be pulled up into the vertical, which is what can ultimately form the tornado. And so what we're learning is, believe it or not, the wind shear that's the most important for tornadoes happens to be about 1,600 feet off the ground, and sometimes even lower. So that's extremely low, and that's something that makes it an issue for forecasting tornadoes. And then when you're talking about the terrain of the Ozarks, 1,600 feet is lower than some of the highest mountaintops, you know, with the Ozark Mountains. I put mountains in quotes because it's not like the Rocky Mountains, but, you know, over 2,000 feet, it's categorized as a mountain. So that's kind of some of the ingredients that are behind the formation of a tornado. And the most important is that low-level rotation, that low-level what we call vortex tube that gets pulled up into the vertical from a thunderstorm.
Perhaps you've heard it said that because of the Ozark Mountains, Northwest Arkansas doesn't experience tornadoes. Is there any validity to that idea?
No, but you know, I have seen a lot of storms that have died out. In fact, it happened so much that I wrote a song about it called The Fayetteville Fizzle. It's a country song, an original. literally, storms, when they come into the area, there is some validity in terms of them weakening. Now, it doesn't always happen, and people aren't protected from the Ozarks, which a lot of people think they are. So while it might seem that storms always weaken, well, there's a lot of cases where they don't. And if it's a really big tornado like what happened in Joplin back in 2011, May 22nd, 2011, that can happen here. It's just the luck of the draw that it hasn't happened. But the terrain does help for some of the weaker storms. And I was doing some research on this, and I really truly believe that, you know, when you're driving on I-49 and you see the terrain, you see the rough and rugged, you know, terrain and the orographic effect of how the wind gets kind of pushed up over the terrain, the moisture can't pool in as much, the humidity, all those ingredients that make tornadoes, it's more difficult to get that in Northwest Arkansas because of the terrain. And so the Ozarks really do impact the weather. However, just to let you know, it's not a fail-safe type of deal where we will never get tornadoes.
Scoff says over the years, he has heard all sorts of ideas about how to prepare if a tornado is headed your way. And he wants to debunk two of those for us.
A lot of people think get underneath an overpass for a tornado. That is a very bad idea. Number one, you're going to block the road. I've seen a lot of people do this in thunderstorms, and it ended up costing people's lives. Where they get underneath an overpass, because there's a video that came out from the April 26, 1991 Andover, Kansas outbreak. The reason I can rattle these dates off so much is because I've done the studies, I've done the research, I've looked at these dates, I've looked at these numbers. But the winds actually accelerate when you are underneath an overpass. So you know the winds are pretty strong in a tornado. Why would we want the winds to be even stronger than what the tornado winds are if you're underneath the overpass and that happens? Because you have a large area of wind, it has to be squeezed down into a smaller volume, which means the velocity has to increase due to the laws of physics. So don't get underneath an overpass. It is not a good idea. Another common myth is, and this is something that your parents may have heard back in the day, they don't hear about as much anymore, but open up the windows when a tornado is coming. Terrible idea. There's no reason to open up the windows. Number one, the tornado is going to open the windows for you with all the debris. And if you have those windows open, then you have more, you're more susceptible to let that fast wind into your house to cause damage and to, you know, ultimately blow out windows and blow out walls and eventually lift off the roof. So those are some of the common misnomers of tornadoes. And not only that, tornadoes can climb mountains and drop in valleys. You mentioned how Northwest Arkansas, a common misconception is that we're safe from tornadoes. But there was a Super Tuesday tornado that went right up and down the rough and rugged terrain that we have in Northwest Arkansas and the Boston Mountains, and it never stopped for 121.7 miles. That was one of the longest track tornadoes in Arkansas's history.
And so with tornadoes, they tend to be seasonal, right? And that has to do with all of those elements that you just talked about, that really it's only in the May. What tends to be tornado season?
Now, see, that's a common myth, just to let you know.
That's great. That's what we're here for.
Because you said that typically in the spring. Did you know some of the biggest tornado outbreaks, including what I mentioned earlier, was the January 21st, 1999 tornado outbreak? There are some really big outbreaks that occur in the winter and very deadly too. The Cincinnati tornado, December 31st, 2010. Who would think on New Year's Eve in the morning that you would have tornadoes coming through? But it happens. Super Tuesday, February 5th, 2008. That was another year where winter was devastating. That was a devastating tornado outbreak. Now, that didn't hit Northwest Arkansas so much, but it hit the Atkins, Cleveland, Clinton area in central Arkansas. And so typically, yes, tornado season is known as March, April, May into early June. And then it kind of cuts off. And the reason for that is you have summer heat that starts to build in, and the jet stream, which is what allows for thunderstorms to develop, starts going back to the north, and that's why the tornado season shifts into the northern plains. However, in the wintertime, Those jet streams can sometimes dip far south into our area, but we don't have the instability or we don't have the moisture. But you have to remember, being in Arkansas, we're really close to the Gulf of Mexico, so that moisture can return very easily, which can bring severe weather even in the wintertime.
While we're on the topic of myths, or we're on the topic of, you know, kind of trying to squash these ideas of what we assume of weather, I'm going to read a few things off to you, and you can tell me if they're fact, fiction, or maybe somewhere in the middle here. I read online, crickets can tell you the temperature outside based on the amount of chirps in 15 seconds.
Absolutely true. Except it's 14 seconds, I think, is you add up the number of chirps over 14 seconds, and I think you add 40. Is that correct?
That's what I read, yeah.
Okay, all right, yeah. So it is absolutely true, and the warmer it is, the faster the crickets chirp. The colder it is, the slower they chirp. And the only problem with that is sometimes if you have a bunch of crickets, you can't hear, you know.
You can't isolate, you can't, which
yeah,
is
you
which.
Can't isolate the – but yeah, the crickets are literally a thermometer.
A halo around the moon means bad weather is on the way.
Typically, yes, absolutely. In fact, there is a there's a rhyme. There's a farmer folklore. A ring around the sun or moon means a storm is coming soon. So what actually causes that? Well, I've seen, you know, paranormal shows and stuff like that, people videoing it. A halo is called basically – it's the ring around the sun or moon is called a 22-degree halo. Typically, it's a 22. Sometimes there's a really wide one where it's 46. And I love – one of the things that I love about meteorology is atmospheric optics. There's so many different things that – and it's very complicated too – to the easiest atmospheric optics to the very complicated, and people see stuff in the sky and it's like it can be explained. But that ring around the moon or the sun occurs from high clouds moving in. Well, those high clouds represent jet stream energy. So if you have a jet stream that's nosing in or starting to move into the area, and it typically means within 1 to 2 days that you will see rain. And it's almost the perfect combination with those clouds moving in, the amount of ice crystals that are in the clouds, that's what allows that ring around the moon or sun. And sometimes if the ring is really bright, then you know a big storm's coming. So it's absolutely true.
Cows lie down when rain is on the way.
That is also true as well. So nature can tell you a lot about the weather. Absolutely. When cows start herding in an area, and animals are very sensitive to the weather. I mean, you just talk to people that have survived tornadoes. You know, animals just act different and weird. But yes, horses typically point their rears towards where the storm is coming to or coming from, and then cows lay down and they herd. So when we were storm chasing, we would see that a lot, where right before the storm, cows would be all herding together. I think they can sense that change in pressure, where they're a lot more sensitive to it than us.
This last one is one that I grew up hearing from my mom, and I'm sure your mom probably said it too. The red sky at night, sailor's delight. Red sky in the morning, sailors take warning. Is there any validity to that?
There is. There's validity to that as well. What I like too is that's actually quoted in the Bible by Jesus in Matthew 16, which I think is kind of cool. So the reason for that, now here's the meteorological explanation for it. When you have a red sky at night, the sun is setting obviously in the western sky. And if you have a red sky, then that means the clouds are already about to pass you. So the storm is over and you're on the backside of the storm. Now, when the sun rises in the eastern sky and you have a red sky, well, what's to the west? The storm, and typically our storms come from west to east. So it doesn't always 100% mean that there will be a storm, but typically, if you do see a reddish sky on a severe weather day, then you know storms are coming. So that is also true.
Well, let me turn this around then. Are there any wives' tales or any, like, you know, kind of folklore stories that you have heard before and you can definitively say this is more of a folklore than anything?
You know, this is not going to be very popular with the public, but the Farmer's Almanac. So the Farmer's Almanac is kind of like a horoscope where there's no way you can get the forecast right, and I know farmers swear by it. And there is some validity to what they put out, like, for instance, the different types of moons. And, you know, you have the worm moon, you have the strawberry moon, the pink moon. Sometimes it's right on because it guessed it and it's good. And then other times you don't hear about when it's wrong. So in 2011, we had that absolutely crazy weather. I bought the 2011 Farmer's Almanac before it, and I was looking, and I'd say it was 35% accurate, which is not great. But keep in mind, it's trying to forecast for a year out in advance on a weekly basis. There's no way you're going to be able to get – if it's perfect and it gets it right all the time, then I'm going to be like, wow, okay, maybe I'll just look at the Farmer's Almanac and start making my forecast that way. When you look at it, and I have, and I looked at the validity, I'm like, well, it didn't get that right at all. Like the big snowstorm, the 2-foot snowstorm, it didn't have that in there, the 2-foot snowstorm. It didn't have all the severe weather that was in there. And so it's on a weekly basis, and it's just – it's not perfect.
Well, and it's interesting to imagine if you were only right 30 to 35% of the time, you would be hearing about it. I mean, I would imagine you're right.
Yeah.
You were probably right, you know, let's be generous and say 95-plus percent of the time. And when you're wrong, I'm sure you hear about it, right?
Yeah, and I'll be the first one to admit I'm very tough critic on myself. You're your own worst critic, right? And people say, well, you got it wrong. I don't like it when I get the forecast wrong.
Lucky for us, Dan Scoff and his team are usually right on the money, even if it's bad news.
Hopefully it's not too hot of a summer, right? We're already starting off, and I hope we get a little bit of a cool down, but it looks like a hot summer is ahead.
That was Dan Scoff, chief meteorologist for KNWA and Fox 24. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Matthew Moore.
Ahead on our show, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis will give you so many ways to hear live music from Fort Smith to Bentonville for the next 7 days. And then Leah Uribe expands our musical experiences with a rhythmic trip to Cuba. Both just ahead on today's show.
Throughout the past year, KUAF has been collecting comments from listeners just like you. And a Eureka Springs listener told us, many of us have said it in many different ways. NPR and KUAF are essential in their daily lives, and that is absolutely true for me as well. We hope this is true for you. June is the last month in our financial year, and we are raising the necessary funds to keep this essential public radio available in your community. Your gift to KUAF before June 30th will help us toward our goal of $35,000. If you have never donated before, or maybe it has been a while, now is a great time. With your pledge of $60 or more, you can choose to receive a KUAF Public Radio Nerd t-shirt. Giving is easy. Simply go to supportkuaf.com and make your essential gift today.
A quick thank you to everybody who supports Public Radio, 91.3 KUAF and Ozarks at Large. You can always do that at supportkuaf.com. I'm in the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. That's where Timothy Dennis resides. Timothy, we're going to talk about some live music.
We are. And to start with, a little bit of housekeeping. Last week during this segment, I mentioned that Trey Burt was performing last Friday night at Fayetteville Roots HQ on the Avenue. I misspoke. I was wrong.
Okay.
That concert is actually happening this Friday night, tomorrow night. And Smokey in the Mirror is performing this Saturday night in a similar Roots on the Avenue concert.
So you didn't miss it, folks?
No.
Good news.
And you can still get tickets and find out more at FayettevilleRoots.org.
Perfect.
Okay, now moving on to other stuff that's happening this weekend.
Right.
Starting with this evening, Melody Pond is going to be at Prairie Street Live in Fayetteville. That show begins at 6:30 tonight, but they're playing until 9:30. Again, that's at Prairie Street Live in Fayetteville.
Gotcha.
Temple Live is going to have a glitter pop show featuring Starbenders. As I said, they're a glitter pop band from the Atlanta area.
Okay.
Tickets for that show are $10. It gets underway at about 8 o'clock tonight down at Temple Live in Fort Smith. Back at Prairie Street Live in Fayetteville tomorrow night, Deep Sequence is going to be on stage.
Deep Sequence.
They're a local-ish psychedelic and progressive rock band. ¶¶ Tickets for that show are $15 advance, $20 at the door. Gets underway at 7:30 tomorrow night. That's at Prairie Street Live in Fayetteville. Going up north to Bentonville, Meteor Guitar Gallery is going to have DeFrance on stage. I don't care what you say, I don't need her anyway, I don't care. I don't care what you say, it don't matter anyway, I don't care. That show gets underway at 9 o'clock tomorrow night. That's at Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville. Also happening tomorrow night up in Rogers, the next Happy Hour show at the Walmart Amp is going to feature Funk Factory.
Mm-hmm.
That show gets underway at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. That's at the Walmart Amp in Rogers. Also happening in Rogers tomorrow, Route 358 is going to be at Moonbrock.
Okay.
Also playing at Levi's Gastro Lounge in Rogers Saturday night beginning at 7 p.m., but that show at Moonbrock gets underway at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Chelsea's over in Eureka Springs is going to have Corey Grinder and the Playboy Scouts. They're a honky-tonk band from the Cleveland area.
Yeah, they are.
You know them.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they're fun.
That show gets underway at 8 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs. Okay, moving on to Saturday night. George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville is going to have Cam Spinks on stage. He is a Southern singer-songwriter from Alabama. Someone there, she's gonna burn you back. I didn't heed the warning. I woke alone one morning to a Dear John letter that turned my heart to ash. And now, hot in the sun, hot in the shade. Tickets for that show are $12. Gets underway at 8 o'clock Saturday night at George's in Fayetteville.
It sounds like everything's waking up because you're telling me about people who are from California and Alabama and Colorado that are coming through.
It's happening.
Okay.
It's happening. Crystal Bridges, the next Forest concert at Crystal Bridges, is going to feature D.D. Jones and Spud Howard. It's part of the Juneteenth celebration that's presented in collaboration with Music Moves, and they're going to explore the genre of black protest music from the 1970s to today.
It's going to be really cool.
So think Sam Cooke, Aretha Franklin,
Marvin Gaye,
stuff in that vein. Tickets for that Forest Concert Series show are $12, $10 if you're a Crystal Bridges member, and if you're 18 and under, you get in for free.
No good.
Should get underway at about 7 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's at the Forest in Crystal Bridges in Bentonville. Happening over in Rogers Saturday night is the next concert on Butterfield Stage, this time featuring Grady Spencer and The Work and Will Gunselman.
I've heard good things about this.
If you don't know who Grady Spencer and The Work is, they're kind of a bluesy country band from the Fort Worth area.
Yeah. People are going crazy. Slipping and sliding away. These days are looking so hazy. And I gotta say,
shows at Butterfield Stage are free, open to the public, general admission shows. It gets underway at about 8 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's in downtown Rogers. Majestic in Fort Smith is going to have Tim Montana and the Josephines on stage, kind of contemporary country rock show. Mm-hmm. Tickets are $12 in advance, $15 the day of. Gets underway at 7 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that is at Majestic in Fort Smith. Then jumping ahead to Monday, someone returns to Northwest Arkansas that we know.
And that is?
Ephraim White.
Oh, Ephraim White. I never see a dime for all of the trouble.
savings account. But it don't take long till it all runs out. It don't take long till it all runs out.
He and Lori Blaine are going to play a set at 612 Coffee House in Fayetteville Monday night. Again, that is at 6 o'clock. If you haven't seen Ephraim White, you should probably take the opportunity. Yeah. He doesn't live here anymore. He's a really, really great songwriter.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And then one final concert I'd like to let you know about. Sona is going to have a special performance, or members of Sona are going to have a special performance at Crystal Bridges next Wednesday.
Okay.
It's going to be an evening of Creole South American music on the lawn at the Frank Lloyd Wright Bachman Wilson House. But it's going to be led by musicians from Sona, Matt Brusca, Fernando Valencia, and Leah Uribe.
All right. And don't forget, Sunday, Father's Day, 1 to 9, Emma Avenue in Springdale blocked off for the Juneteenth Freedom Fest, and they got music the whole time.
It's going to be a crazy weekend of music, and that's how I like it.
What are we going to do for the next couple of weeks when you're not here to tell us about this? You're going on vacation.
We'll have something to share next week for sure. After that, we'll see.
Oh, I like that. I didn't mean to put you under the spotlight.
You're fine, Kyle.
Okay. All right. Timothy Dennis keeps us up to date with music, apparently even when he's on vacation, from the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you, Kyle.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. We open Sound Perimeter today with an excerpt from the piece Rítmicas by Cuban composer Tania León. León was born in Havana and is also known as a conductor, educator, and advisor to arts organizations, including the New York Philharmonic. Rítmicas is a five-movement work based on the son and guaguancó clave, patterns used in traditional Afro-Cuban music and utilized here to tie together polyrhythms and other musical organizations. Rítmicas was inspired by the legacy and title of a work by Cuban composer, violinist, and conductor Amadeo Roldán, who in 1930 wrote the first symphonic piece to incorporate Afro-Cuban percussion instruments. Let us listen to another excerpt from Rítmicas by Cuban composer Tania León, interpreted by the Chicago Center for Contemporary Compositions Grossman Ensemble, a dynamic, collaborative, and interdisciplinary program for new music at the University of Chicago. Thank you. That was an excerpt from the piece Rítmicas by Cuban composer Tania León. We, women of color and musicians, woke up last week to news of Tania León winning the 2021 Pulitzer Prize in Music for her piece Strides, commissioned by the New York Philharmonic. And we got to experience the empowerment that comes from representation, the pride and the hope that our marginalized and underrepresented voices, especially those of composers, are gaining some attention in the world of the so-called classical music. We also took those news as a loud message to our surrounding worlds. Symphony orchestras and chamber ensembles, balance your programming, hopefully 50-50, with music by non-cisgender white male composers. Audiences and patrons, hold us, musicians and arts organizations, accountable to represent your voices and your points of view. From Within is an energetic piece first presented in the year 2000 in the documentary by Spanish director Fernando Trueba, film called Calle 54, about Latin jazz. From Within featured Dominican pianist and composer Michel Camilo, along with Horacio El Negro Hernandez in the drums and Anthony Jackson in the bass. As with Tania León, Rítmicas, this piece is tied together by the clave sound, the sonic structure, and by improvisation. From Within is a display of beauty, virtuosism, and passion, and everything else I look for when I listen to music. I hope you too find joy in listening to this piece. That was an excerpt from Within, featuring Dominican pianist and composer Michel Camilo, Horacio El Negro Hernandez in the drums, and Anthony Jackson in the bass. Happy Pride, happy Juneteenth, happy summer solstice to all. And let us continue celebrating, uplifting, empowering all the voices, and being proud of who we are. This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
On tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large, we celebrate one of Northwest Arkansas's own who has made it big on a very big stage. Janae Fleener, Springdale native, has twice been named the Country Music Association's Musician of the Year. Later this month, the city of Springdale is throwing a party in her honor, and we'll ask her about it. Plus, our own Sean Hickey, Western Red, the host of If That Ain't Country, talks to us about his public radio program being honored by the Arkansas Country Music Association this spring. Award winners and more tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m. on KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is giving away tickets to the 2021 Spaceberry Music Festival, July 1st through the 3rd, on the farm in Eureka Springs. This three-day festival welcomes Talk, Forgotten Space, Steady Flow, and more. Winners announced Friday, June 25th, during Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com for registration and more information.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Healing Springs. We are a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. You can find out more about us at KUAF.com, more about Ozarks at Large at OzarksAtLarge.com. Timothy Dennis produced today's show, as well as today's edition of Sound Perimeter. Contributors to the program today also included Antoinette Grajeda, Matthew Moore, Timothy Dennis, and Leah Uribe. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. More about Daryl at his Facebook and Instagram feeds. KUAF's membership director is Sherry Ottaviano, and you make her happy with your support of your public radio station. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio in downtown Fayetteville, I'm Kyle Kellums. Please get rest when you can. We'll talk again very soon.